Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine food Friday, December 9th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, our friend Chef Jasper Alexander of Hattie's Restaurant is here with us, and word is he's got some olive poppers with him. I think our producer's already tried them. Oh, and he's got a new cookbook, too, and it's a great book, the Hattie's Restaurant Cookbook, Classic Southern and Louisiana Recipes. It's a beautifully illustrated book. We're going to talk about that. We'll talk about some of the recipes therein and any questions you might have. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Chef Jasper Alexander is here. Some classic Southern food. Your calls are coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's a Food Friday, and Jasper Alexander is here. Jasper is the chef and co-owner of Hattie's Restaurant in Saratoga Springs, named Best Southern and Soul Food in the region by Metroland for well over the last decade. He's a Culinary Institute of America grad and has worked in famous kitchens in New York and Seattle. He also beat Bobby Flay in a chicken frying contest on national TV. His new book is called The Hattie's Restaurant Cookbook, Classic Southern and Louisiana Recipes. It features more than 100 recipes from crawfish boil to Cajun coleslaw. Jasper Alexander, welcome back.
Thank you, Ray. It's great to be here.
Number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. So you're pretty tired.
I'm pretty tired.
12 days on the road.
Yeah, it's been a long slog. It's been a great time, but I got back about 2 o'clock in the morning last night after putting about 1,600 miles on my rent-a-car, starting in Memphis and ending up in Indianapolis, you know, via Montgomery, Alabama. So I took the short trip.
And this is the book tour.
This is the book tour. Yeah, we did a 12-day tour of the South, doing book signings in some great independent bookstores and little TV spots on a lot of morning news shows and, you know, and regional variety shows. So it's been a great time.
Do you feel like a big star now?
No, I feel tired now.
Really?
Yeah, I feel tired. You know, I mean, usually, you know, chefs are sort of tethered to their stoves, to their kitchens and their operations, and you know, most of us don't get an opportunity to travel around like that. So it was a blast, but I can understand now with some of the friends I have that do travel for a living why they get so tired of traveling for a living. It was, you know, different hotel rooms every night and, you know, 12 hours in this city, 26 hours in that city, but it was a blast.
The book is beautiful.
Thank you.
And I assume it was well received on the tour.
It was very well received. We've had a great run with it. Like I said, we did a lot of TV spots in Nashville and Memphis and Montgomery, and we hit some great book signings in Oxford, Mississippi, and Memphis and Nashville as well. It was a lot of fun.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Over 100 recipes, I guess. More than 100
in this
book.
Yeah, more than 100 with about 120, 30 with cocktails and things of that nature.
You got to have the cocktails.
Got to have the cocktails.
But what really caught my attention was the introduction, which is fabulous.
Thank you.
So tell us a little about, and you've been on before, but about how you came to be in Saratoga.
So I came up to Saratoga in the summer of 95 on my way out of Manhattan, and I had a friend that had worked at Ciro's in Saratoga, and he said, hey, you know, I know you're thinking about getting out of New York. I'm getting out of New York. You ought to consider coming up and doing the summer gig with me. It gets us out of the city. And you know, it really provided a sensible and much-needed transition to get out of New York. Because a cook in New York, you don't make any money. I mean, I was making $500 a week, and you know,
doubled that at Ciro's.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's almost exactly right. And also New York in the summertime is kind of a drag. It's hot, and the restaurant scene is actually a little bit subdued there in the summertime because most of the people that
get
go
out
to the
Dodge.
Restaurants, yeah, they get out. The people that can get out of New York in the summertime get out.
Yeah,
And I met my wife and fell in love, and I went out. I was sort of committed to being a ski bum for a year, and she had some teaching commitments to fulfill here in the capital region, and she worked at Hattie's that year that we were apart, and so then she came out west and we were in Sun Valley for another year, and then we went to Seattle for about 5 years, and then we were sort of at a crossroads professionally, and we had spoken to the prior owners of Hattie's about possibly joining force, and they called us and said, hey, we think you'd be great opportunity for you guys, and you think you've got the right mix of skill sets to really take this restaurant over, and are you interested? And Beth, you know, my wife, was the one who was really you know, gung-ho about it.
You had some hesitation?
I had some hesitation. I mean, the Capital Region, you know, I was doing, you know, a lot of good things in Seattle. I was working for a big restaurant corporation, and the food scene here at the time wasn't what it is now. And so I was a little concerned that if something didn't work out, and I was also concerned about whether or not I'd be happy, you know, running this small little Southern restaurant. I mean, my focus had been on this, you know, white tablecloth, super high-end, you know, my whole career. And so I was really, you know, sort of questioning whether or not I'd be content. And what I learned is that I love it. And I, you know, once I got into that venue, and especially this restaurant, it's such a special place that I decided, you know what, this was the right decision to leave all that stuff behind. And this is just a much more comfortable way to make a living in this business.
Jasper Alexander is our guest. He's chef and co-owner of Hattie's Restaurant in Saratoga Springs. He's our guest on this Food Friday. And you certainly may call if you wish at 800-348-2551. This is not a history book, as you pointed out to me in the green room before the show, but there is a little bit about Hattie. Tell us a little about Hattie's.
Hattie's is an absolute beloved institution in Saratoga. It's been there since 1938. It was started by Hattie Mosley, who was a caretaker for a family that spent summers in Saratoga. And, you know, over the late 20s and 30s, she had saved her money. And in 1938, she sort of told these guys, said, "Hey, look, I'm going to go. Thank you, but I'm done. I'm going to do my own thing and open up a restaurant."
She started with $35 or $38.
$35, yeah. And it's become an absolute institution. And this woman really embodied, you know, a lot of the spirit of Saratoga and the charitable nature of Saratoga. And she was just a wonderful, wonderful person. I mean, and I unfortunately never got the chance to meet her. So you know, before when my wife and I first purchased Hattie's, you know, I probably had, you know, once or twice, three times a month, I'd have people come up and tell me stories about Hattie's.
Yeah.
And not only heard a lot of stories from the employees that had worked with her for many years that were still under our employ. And, you know, I felt it, you know, was the time that before a lot of these stories and the oral history is gone, that we better set a record. And while I am not a historian and did not, you know, I don't, you know, I'm not from Saratoga, and I sort of was a transplant here, so I didn't feel it was my place to write a real history, you know, about everything. But, you know, we had to tell the story, you know, and how we fit into it, and sort of where the restaurant's been and where we think it's headed. And
you know, you're very modest, and you point out to me now more than once, listen, I'm not from Saratoga. You're already an institution in Saratoga, my man, so well, you better get used to it.
Thank you. I'll try to fulfill the shoes, but.
Our guest today is Chef Jasper Alexander. The number to call is 800-348-2551. The new book is The Hattie's Restaurant Cookbook, Classic Southern and Louisiana Recipes. And I just opened to page 35, and like it was kismet, a caramelized onion and bacon tart.
Absolutely.
Tell me about that one.
So that's a fantastic appetizer. Sometimes you'll see it in French restaurants. It's pis-la-dare is sometimes what they call it. And basically it's a... The tart dough in that recipe is something that I learned from an Austrian chef I worked with actually in Sun Valley, and it's just an absolute benchmark boilerplate, super easy tart dough recipe. Anybody can do it. It's very similar to a pie dough. The ratios of butter to flour are just a little bit different, and it's just a really crispy dough, and you can use it in many different ways. So we do a couple of variations in the book. There's a caramelized onion and bacon version. There's a caramelized onion and goat cheese version.
How about all three together?
You can put all three together. You know, you can make the dough and freeze it and then pull it out for parties and you sort of have something in the can ready to go, which is, you know, always nice. And, you know, for people that are sort of, you know, get hung up on pie dough, this is something where, you know, it's not technically a pie dough, but the process is virtually the same. And you sort of realize that pie doughs aren't all that, you know, it's really not that hard. And it's, you know, it takes seconds to make it super easy to remember. So that's a good one.
Does it make me uncultured to say that this is merely a bacon and onion delivery vehicle?
No.
Because I think there's a lot of bacon in there.
Anyway, I mean, bacon is an important food group. We need to get, you know, our daily allowances of bacon for sure. What better way to have it than on tart dough?
Well, there's so much in this book that we will talk about, including the pimento cheese, which I opened on page 63.
We bought some pimento cheese today, too. Yeah, pimento cheese is... it's sort of my personal mission to really get pimento cheese entrenched in the Northeast. I mean, when we were down south on this tour, you know, pimento cheese is everywhere. I mean, it's like everywhere, like peanut butter's everywhere, you know. Yeah. And you know, you walk into the store and there's 15 different kinds of pimento cheese, and everybody debates about whose pimento cheese is better. And so I've been trying to bring pimento cheese to the people up here for 15 years, and I'm still pushing the agenda.
So how do you do it?
So with it's very simple. I think there's some things, you know, with a lot of good food is you know, as much about what you don't put in it as what you do put in it, and having a light touch and a deft hand. And so pimento cheese is one of those things where you really have got to sort of be a purist about it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So this has really good extra sharp white cheddar and pimentos, which you can either roast your peppers yourself or you can buy jarred pimentos in the store, and they're just fine, and grated onion and mayonnaise and a little bit of salt and white pepper, and that is it.
And it's so good.
Yeah, it's delicious.
And it's amazing there's anything left after our producer was at
the
show.
Right. He was hitting it pretty hard.
And you also brought, what are those?
These are olive poppers.
My heavens.
And one of the sort of quintessential Southern party foods are cheese straws. You'll see them pretty much everywhere, and everybody's got a recipe, kind of like pimento cheese. So this is a sort of a spin on a cheese straw. So we take the same dough, but then instead of rolling it out or cutting it into a stick, I take it and I roll it into a little ball, and I press my thumb into it and make an indention in there, and I stuff a Kalamata olive in it, and then I wrap that dough back around it, and then we bake it. So it's a crispy cheese and olive bite, basically.
Oh my heavens.
And they're super good. They're pretty addictive, and you know, once between the salty brininess of the olive and the buttery cheesiness richness of the dough, it's a nice combination.
You're killing me, man. All right, so we'll talk much more about this book. We'll take a break here in a moment. We'll take one email before we take a break, and then we'll get to the phones. This one's from Kelly, who says, "What are the best Southern vegetarian recipes we could try out?" And that's from Kelly in Albany.
Kelly in Albany. Collard greens, obviously, all our sides at Hattie's are vegetarian. It's, you know, we are unapologetically a chicken shack, and I don't, you know, intend to do anything
great
other.
Chicken.
But you cannot ignore the fact that some people just don't want to eat meat. And so we try to make some options for people, and there are options. But collard greens are great. You know, things like Hoppin' John, black-eyed peas, you could do, you know, a mixture. We do a black-eyed pea. We do call it a Hoppin' John salad, and it's a mixture of black-eyed peas, rice, peppers, corn, a little extra virgin olive oil, some spices. And so that's a really nice, you know, it's a whole protein with the black-eyed peas and the rice in there. It makes a complete protein.
Is that in this book?
It is in the book. Hominy, as you asked, we're asking about hominy.
We'll get to that. We'll take a break because Mr. Albanian doesn't know exactly what hominy is. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Chef Jasper Alexander is our guest. The new book is the Hattie's Restaurant Cookbook, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from John Andrews Farmhouse Restaurant. Sourcing from local farms and food makers since 1990, John Andrews Farmhouse features Jove D, an Italian prefix menu in the Berkshires every Thursday night, Egremont, Massachusetts. JohnAndrewsRestaurant.com. Roundhouse Bakery, Cambridge, New York. Featuring baked goods along with coffee, teas, soups, and sandwiches, using locally sourced and organic as available produce and ingredients. Facebook.com/Roundhouse Bakery Cafe. The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter-scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com. Bread and Butter, located in North Amherst Mill District, offering breakfast and lunch daily from traditional staples to chef specialties such as duck confit hash and maple sriracha pork belly, breadandbutteramherst.com. And Crown Maple Syrup, Hudson Valley, open every weekend for lunch and maple tours, with the third annual Pancake Breakfast with Santa on Saturday, December 17th. CrownMaple.com for tickets.
Hey, it's Food Friday. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Chef Jasper Alexander is our guest. He is the chef and co-owner of Hattie's Restaurant in Saratoga Springs. Makes some real mean fried chicken. His new book is The Hattie's Restaurant Cookbook, Classic Southern and Louisiana Recipes. All right, before you tell me what hominy is, let's take a call or two. 800-348-2551. Jenny in Poughkeepsie has been patiently waiting. Jenny, you're on.
Hi. It's wonderful to hear about your things. That onion tart has me just salivating.
The bacon and onion tart, oh yeah.
I like to make gumbos.
Uh-huh.
And etouffee and a bunch of other Cajun specialties.
Sure.
But eating those things is not always good for your waistline. and the roux that I use is usually half oil and half flour.
Okay, yep.
And then you you make it as dark as you need it to be. It can be really dark, or absolutely, it can be more of a peanut butter, depending on whether you're using seafood or andouille sausage or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is there any way to get around all that oil?
With the roux in particular, or just in general?
Yeah, in the roux. Well, I mean, I love to make gumbo, but it's really heavy.
Yeah. So you can, I mean, obviously, you know, this sounds like a little bit of an easy way out, but there's some truth to it. I mean, portion control is key, you know, rather than cut something out entirely, just not you know, having the second or third bowl, which is hard if you're making a really good gumbo, because it's delicious.
Yeah.
But as far as the roux goes in particular, not really. I mean, there's some ways that you could, you know, sort of hack it, so to speak, a little bit. So, I mean, a roux, by definition, has to be half fat, half flour. So by choosing oil, you're already doing a little bit of yourself of a favor, as opposed to using butter or duck fat or something like that, or bacon fat, which
I've
is also
I've done it with butter.
Yeah.
Harder to keep it from burning.
It is. And what you can do sometimes, and even I do this in the restaurant sometimes if we're in a pinch, because especially with gumbos, you really want that roux as dark as you can get it without it having burnt. Because burnt is one of those things you just can't get out of food. You can, you know, it's just once
cover
it's
there, it up. But...
Yeah, you can't cover it up. It just comes through no matter what. So.
Yeah.
I know.
But sometimes, if we're really in a rush, I will make a roux with brown butter. And so I'll take, you know, and that sort of cuts down the time and gives you some of that nutty background flavor without all the time. But, of course, then you're using, you know, butter and a saturated fat as opposed to, you know, maybe a canola oil or an olive oil or something like that.
But, yeah, I like
and also just not using, you know, our gumbo at Hattie's is pretty rich and it's pretty thick, you know, so you can also just lighten up on the amount of roux that you use. And obviously the body of your soup will also be lighter as a result, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. But you could also, so you could make a little bit of roux with that brown butter and then maybe thicken it with another sort of form of thickener, like either a potato starch or a corn starch or something like that, and use a little bit of the brown butter roux for the flavor, but then actually get your thickening power from something else. So that would be the other way. That would be the other most obvious workaround.
Jenny, thanks a lot for the call. This email, it kind of dovetails with Jenny's. This is from Alan. My wife is a vegetarian. I'm a big fan of gumbo. Do you have any ideas about an authentic vegetarian gumbo?
Absolutely. One of the classic gumbos out there is a greens gumbo. So has no meat in. I mean, you might find some that have some you know, side meat or something like that.
Some alligator.
Some alligator. Some, you know, or some side pork or something like that. But you could make a greens gumbo, which is typically, you know, a mixture of greens, so turnip greens, mustard greens, collard greens, kale. You know, you'd want to have a mixture of sort of the more neutral winter greens like kales and collards, and then you'd want to put something that has a little bit more bite to it, like a turnip or a mustard green in there as well to give it some flavor. But that's a classic Southern and Louisiana gumbo. You could also do just okra gumbo too, you know, vegetable and okra gumbo. So there's definitely ways to, and with all the roux and stuff, there's plenty of flavor in there.
So you arrived about 12 hours ago from the flight.
I did.
How
you
holding up, man?
I'm a little. I expected to, you know, hopefully have a. You know, I knew I was coming on here, and we've got a book signing tomorrow too. So,
or Open Door, right?
Open Door Bookstore. Yeah, 1 o'clock tomorrow we have a book signing, which is going to be great. It's a fabulous bookstore on J Street.
Will you take a nap before then?
I'm going to get a little bit of sleep before then. I mean, I haven't even seen my kids yet. I mean, I got home at like 2 o'clock in the morning. They were all asleep. They sort of, you know, sort of shook me and I laid eyes on them this morning before they went off to school. But so I'm sort of getting thrown right back into it. I've got to work at the restaurants tonight and tomorrow. So I'm thinking it's going to be maybe Monday or Tuesday before I get to take a breath. But you know, that's the way.
Do you need a cup of coffee?
No, I'm good.
You sure?
I'm good. Yeah.
All right. Anything at all?
Yeah, I got the water. I'm set.
Oh, wow. Unbelievable. Yeah. By the way, you know, when we take calls, I can turn the mic off. My mic, and I can. Those olive things are ridiculous.
They're good, aren't they?
Oh my gosh! Yeah. So tell us what's in them again.
So it's really a cheese straw dough is essentially like a cracker dough. So it's nothing for the faint of heart, but basically it's a you cream together butter and cheese, and then you add just enough flour for it to hold together when it bakes. For 2 pounds of cheese and a half a pound of butter, there's about 3.5 cups of flour, which is really just enough to give it some structure and a little bit of spice. And then ordinarily you'd roll that out and you'd cut them into and you'd chill it. And it gets very hard because it's all cheese and butter. So when it's cold, it's hard as a rock. You'd cut little straws out of it, and then you'd bake those at like 350 degrees. So instead of doing that, I roll these up into a little ball, and then I push my thumb in the middle of them and make a big depression in it, and then I put a Kalamata olive in there, a pitted Kalamata olive, and then wrap the dough back around it and bake it.
At what temperature?
About 350, and they take maybe 15, 20 minutes to bake. And they freeze. You know, you could bake them and freeze them, but the you know, it's just a really great combination. You get the sort of vinegary brininess of the olive, and then that, you know, is juxtaposed with the rich cheese and butter and the crispiness of the cracker, and they're good. they're hard to stop eating.
There may be 20 in the bowl. I don't think there'll be one by the end of the show.
No, I don't expect to leave with
it. Let's go to the phones, and Rex in Burlington. Rex, you're on.
Hey, Jasper, this is Rex. How you doing?
I'm good, Rex. How are you?
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm in God's country here, and I'm driving hands-free.
Gotcha.
But listen, so Hattie's my all-time favorite restaurant, bar none, best brunch ever.
Oh, thank you.
I learned that I love Bloody's.
Yep.
And I just wanted to send out a thank you, because Hattie's is not just successful because of the awesome food. It's because of the awesome folks that work there and yourself. Just so everybody knows, I don't know if you remember or not, you drove gift certificates to my mom in Queensbury.
Oh, I do remember.
Maybe a couple years ago.
Yep.
A guy.
Remember that, Linda?
Yep, I do remember that. And I mean, I appreciate that. I mean, that's kind of, I mean, that story is a great example of, you know, Hattie's is more than just a restaurant. I mean, it's and the people, you know, and I thank you for including me in that, but I mean, our staff is fantastic, and we definitely couldn't do it without them. And they, you know, we've got a lot of people that have been with us for a very long time, and they go out of their way to make sure that people have a time that is indicative of the restaurant, and is also, you know, we really try to bring that Southern hospitality to the forefront and really make people welcome, and going the extra step is part of that.
Well, that was nice. Thanks for that call, Rex. 800-348-2551 on this Food Friday. Jasper Alexander is here. The book is Hattie's Restaurant, the Hattie's Restaurant Cookbook, Classic Southern and Louisiana Recipes. Just did a 12-day book signing tour, got in at 2 o'clock in the morning, and here he is on Food Friday 12 hours later.
Absolutely.
All right, so, you know, I grew up in Del Mar,
right.
All right?
Yeah.
So hominy, not a real popular staple in my house. What the hell is hominy?
So hominy is a type of corn, and basically it's essentially a field corn. So it's not a corn like sweet corn like you see most of the time up here. I mean, I was just in Indiana, and I was some friends of mine live on a farm, and I was asking them, because everything's down now. I said, what do they grow around here? And they said corn and soybeans. And I was like, well, what kind of corn? And there it's mostly feed corn for ethanol, corn for, you know, it's not sweet corn, but up here is mostly sweet corn. So hominy is a sort of field corn type of corn that it would be inedible if it wasn't soaked in a solution of lye and water.
Lye.
And it bloats that up, and then it sort of denatures all the proteins and puffs it up so that you can actually eat it. And traditionally, it was done so that they could grind it back down into a flour, either grits or a corn flour or a cornmeal. But you can also get it. Pozole is another name for it. So in a lot of Latin American cuisines, you'll see pozole. It's the same thing.
Same thing.
And it has this really great sort of chewy, toothy texture to it. And I love it. I've been eating it a lot as a kid. I mean, I grew up, and I talk about this in the book, I mean, I grew up a large chunk in San Diego. My whole family's from the South, but we bounced around quite a bit.
Yeah.
And so it's a real common ingredient in Mexican cuisine. And so I grew up eating it, you know, with green chilies, and my mom would make this casserole with green chilies and I think some cottage cheese and cheese on top, and it was delicious. And then we'd also get it from the southern end of things. It's just a really diverse sort of corny vegetable. It's sort of more corny than corn is, you know. And it's got
on page 161 of the book. 160 is the creamy hominy recipe, and the beautiful picture on page 161, full
Thank
page.
You.
I still can't get beyond the lye. Isn't that a dangerous chemical?
Well, you spare lots of things that are dangerous that use sparingly are not so dangerous. I mean, bourbon could be considered dangerous, but we don't shy away from that.
Yes. I bathe in this stuff.
So it's part of the process for you know the production of the hominy and for processing it into something that's edible. So without that, you wouldn't even be able to be edible.
Clearly, you rinse it off before.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Mark in Springfield. Mark, you're on.
Hey, happy Friday.
Hey, you too.
Hey, thank you, Mark.
Hey, quick question. Yeah. got my mind all caught up in bourbon now. But
it's hard to get out of that.
I know. I'm looking because I cook a lot, and I can never find a really good quality and Andouille sausage that delivers, or like a tasso ham, which you can never find around here either.
Yep.
Like, is there a purveyor or someone that you can get from? You know, any smokehouse or
actually
make it authentic, where it's got that flavor that you know that
absolutely.
You're looking for.
Absolutely. There's a couple that you can get around here and that I use quite a bit. So I use primarily two different kinds of Andouille. One's from a smokehouse in New Hampshire called North Country Smokehouse. And I know North Country Smokehouse. They're online, and they're a great boutique smokehouse up in New Hampshire. And they do bacon, they do Andouille, they do tasso, they do a whole slew of other types of sausages. And I know it's all available online. But I have also found their tasso and their Andouille at Healthy Living up in Saratoga has it. I don't know, we'll do a couple of shameless plugs here, but Adventures in Food, which also has a retail component, if you call them, they carry both. And they also carry Leedy's, which is the other brand that I use a lot. And that's a great brand out of Pennsylvania, which has a little bit more pronounced smokiness in the North Country, and the flavor profile is just a little bit different, but it's also really good.
Okay. All right.
But those are two. And then you can always order it online from Louisiana, too. And if you're really in a pinch, it doesn't have the spiciness, but kielbasa is a great substitute, less the spice. So if you put your spice in somewhere else, you know, the kielbasa is going to have that smokiness, but it's not going to have the spice profile that an Andouille has.
Mark, thank you for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It is Food Friday with Chef Jasper Alexander. Page 216 of the new book, The Hattie's Restaurant Cookbook, Pecan Bread Pudding. Looks pretty good, man.
It is good.
Tell me about that one.
So that's, you know, I like bread puddings of all sorts, both sweet and savory. And there's a few of them in the book. There's a pecan bread pudding. There's also a savory cornbread pudding and a spoon bread that's kind of somewhere in between the two. And it's a great way. Bread pudding is a great way to use up leftover bread. I mean, that's we've
absolutely
all got that bread drawer, you know, where there's little bits and pieces of bread that get sitting in there that nobody wants to eat, and then they get tossed aside and covered up with the chips. And you know,
yeah, you've been to my house.
Yeah, exactly. And then you pull it back out. But so bread pudding is a great way to use that stuff up. It doesn't really matter what kind of bread you use. And it's really simple. It's the bread, you know, usually stale and dried up is preferable. And then you make a really rich custard with some vanilla in it, and you let that custard soak into the bread. And in this recipe, we add some pecans on top towards the end just to give it a little nutty earthiness and a little crunch to it texturally. Because bread pudding, you know, it's soft. It's pudding.
Yeah.
You know, it's pudding with some structure. So
And
then you add bourbon sauce.
Oh.
Yeah, you got to work in the bourbon.
What bourbon do you use? Cheapo?
Old
Granddad or something?
Yeah, for this you can use something cheapo, Heaven Hill or Old Granddad or any of that. But you know, you don't want to pull out the
expensive
Pappy Van Winkle for this one.
The 23.
Yeah. But you know, you could if that's how you roll.
If
you know,
you're
no one's judging. You know.
And then the other one, the dessert that caught my eye immediately before the show, warm chocolate marquee.
Warm chocolate marquee. That's sort of the granddaddy of all warm chocolate desserts. And this is a little bit of a variation on it because the chocolate marquee is a traditional French dessert. And it's typically a frozen dessert, so it's sort of like a semifreddo, which is sort of like a frozen, almost like a frozen pudding or a frozen mousse, but very dense and silky. And this is a sort of a spin on that, and there's nothing in this dessert but sugar, egg yolks, and chocolate.
Oh.
And so it bakes up somewhere between a souffle. It sort of bridges the gap between a souffle, a warm pudding, and a flourless chocolate cake. So it has no flour in it, but it has some structure provided by the eggs. And it's just about as gooey and delicious of a warm chocolate cake as you can have.
By the way, who took the pictures for this book?
Heather Baumtommen took the pictures, and she is...
She's a genius.
She is very good. We've been working together for a long time. She does all the photography for the restaurant. And, you know, when I was approached to write this book, and obviously, you know, the publisher was not throwing a photographer my way, there was really no choice of who I wanted to work with. Not only do we have a great rapport, but I have eminent faith in her skills, which are much deserved.
They're well-founded, indeed.
Yeah,
let's go back
great.
To the phones here. Jim in Adams, Mass. Jim, you're on.
Yay, Ray. I agree with both of you that bacon is an important food group.
Yes, it is.
It is.
Yes, I wrote a book recently. It's called The Vegetarian Myth, written by a woman, Leary, L-I-E-R-R-E, Keith. And she was a vegan most of her life, from her adult life, for 20 years or more. Did a lot of physical harm to herself, she found, over the years. And she's dispelling a lot of what she calls the vegetarian myth. We do need saturated fats, animal source fats, and oils in our diet. Otherwise, as modern humans, we can't be truly fully healthy.
Hey, Jim, you're a regular caller to this program. Let me ask you this question. Are you trying to stir up trouble? Are you trying to? Because we're having a nice chat with Jasper Alexander. If you throw something like that out, then I'll get 18 calls for people trying to refute Jim from Adams, Massachusetts.
Well, let them read The Vegetarian Myth by Larry Keith first before they start flying off the handle. Get some facts and some science in into their traditions.
All right, note to self. Leave Jim for last caller on every show. Jim, thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it. Have a good one. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Tommy in Neversink. Tommy, you're on.
Hi, hello. You know, I grew up in the South, and I can't find anywhere in any restaurant the cornbread that we used to have, which had a very hard crust.
Yeah.
I mean, well, a lot of times what you do is you'd bake the pan first a little bit.
Sure, sure.
And then put the batter in.
Yep.
And, you know, what you find at restaurants is this very sweet, cake-like cornbread.
Right.
And I wondered if you've ever seen that in a restaurant. Is it at your restaurant? I don't know. I've never been there.
Well, I invite you to come up and try ours and see if we, you know, hold muster. But so a lot of cornbread up north. I mean, there's you know, if you're from the South, the biggest issue with sort of cornbread most of the time is the quality of the cornmeal. So like bleached, fully processed flour, they've sort of stripped all the good stuff out of it. And so to have that sort of southern cornbread texture and flavor, you got to use a cornmeal that's not been stripped of all its bran and germ and all that sort of stuff. It's got to have some grit to it. Then what you're saying about the crust is also a factor. You know, most people who are used to eating their grandmother's or their mother's cornbread, it was baked in a cast iron pan that was put in the oven prior to it baking. And that's really the key to getting that thicker crust. I mean, our cornbread is at the restaurant is a little thicker and denser than most. It's not that really light, airy cornbread that falls apart, you know, when you try to put butter on it. You know, I want the butter to be able to soak in. So I think ours is probably more similar to what you're talking about. And then, you know, a lot of people you got to put more cornmeal than flour in there. I mean, you know, with the modern cornmeals, you do need to have a little flour in there for the most part, although some Southerners are, you know, are turning over in their graves right now with me saying that. and also sugar. Yep. Sugar is a matter of great debate as well, of whether or not they're, you know my grandma.
I don't use any sugar.
That's exactly.
Bob's Red Mill has a good mix.
Bob's Red Mill would be a good choice for sure.
Yeah.
Hodgson's is a good.
Tommy, we got to take a break here, but thank you for the call. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. It's Food Friday. Chef Jasper Alexander is here. His new book is The Hattie's Restaurant Cookbook. We'll be back with a home stretch coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Gloriosa & Company, Ashfield, Massachusetts, preparing weddings, showers, reunions, and more at the Curtis House with 3 B&B rooms available or at their recently renovated barn, Farm to Vase Florals, information at gloriosaco.com. Umana Restaurant & Wine Bar, Albany, New York, featuring international cuisine, Ethiopian specials, and eclectic wines, private parties, Tuesday through Sunday, the meeting place for all people, umanarestaurant.com. The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butterscratch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com. Big Y, for over 80 years, family-owned and operated market with 4 locations in the Berkshires with locally grown produce, fresh meat, and seafood, bigy.com. And SUNY Schenectady County Community College, offering over 55 degree, certificate, and program options in music, culinary arts, business, liberal arts, math, and science. SUNYSCCC.edu.
Well, I'm getting some pointers on how to make the olive cheese.
Yeah, it's a super poppers. Super Bowl. Good Super Bowl snack.
I could see having 20 or 30 dozen of these on hand. The number to call here is 800-348-2551. Chef Jasper Alexander is here. The Hattie's Restaurant Cookbook Tour winding up, but you'll be at the Open Door Bookstore tomorrow.
Yep, Open Door Bookstore tomorrow. Then we're going to sort of let things rest for a little while, and we've got some holiday caterings we've got to do, and obviously the holidays. And then I think we're going to pick up again nothing's confirmed yet, but we're working on it to do a little Northeast tour after the new year, probably Boston, New York.
It's not a really great time to travel in the Northeast.
No, but
I know you've been
driving
here a while.
Yeah, I'm an avid skier, so I log a lot of time in the snow. I don't mind driving from... If I'd have to drive from Maine to Virginia in February, I'm okay with that.
So get all-wheel drive. You're good to go.
I'm ready to go.
All right, back to the phones. Jim in North Pownell, Vermont. Jim, you're on.
Hey, cornbread.
Yeah.
I grow an open-pollinated corn called Nothstein Dent, and I grind my own cornmeal.
Fabulous.
And then I bake it in a cast-iron pan, and it's to die for. You got to put a couple slices of bacon on top of it.
Sure, of course.
When you cook it,
you?
But
yeah, makes a point.
But I just thought I'd enter that comment.
Yeah. You grind your own. I mean, a lot of these, you know, milling your own flours is coming back into vogue. You know, which is really taking things deep. But it's it makes a difference when all the good stuff's been stripped out of things.
I've got a hand grinder that I use and I make my own.
Good going, man. Well, thanks for the call.
Take care.
All right, great show.
Thank you.
You know, any page I open to in this devilish book that you have written just makes me hungry. Brisket chili on page 67.
You might want to add that to your Super Bowl thing.
It's a really
good chili. I think brisket's I like brisket chili better than anything else, and this has got a really great blend of chilies in it. This is actually a sort of a variation of my mom's recipe, honestly, and it's a great chili.
Okay.
I did it for a chili bowl a few years ago, and it won for the chili bowl, and it was, you know, it's I do it every now and again in the restaurant, but it's quite a process, you know. Brisket chili, it takes...
You gotta make the brisket first, right?
You gotta get the brisket in, you know, you gotta cut the brisket into little pieces, but it's worth the time and the effort.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that you can make, you know, if you spend half a day making it, you can make a few gallons, you can freeze some, and frankly, chili is one of those things that gets
better.
Yeah, like most soups, but chili is one of those things that really needs to develop for a couple of days. So,
okay, so basically I'll have the brisket chili olive poppers and the pimento cheese, and I guess I'll need an angioplasty by the end of the halftime.
Maybe some bread pudding for dessert.
Oh, yeah. Jim in Great Barrington. Jim, you're on.
It seems that a lot of us... Southern people named Jim who are talking about cornbread today. You could turn this show into a cornbread show.
Who knew?
Yes.
An odd coincidence.
I have a couple of comments about this, too. As a matter of fact, I got so tired of looking for good cornbread here, I actually have two blog posts up on Southern cornbread and with a recipe. But my opinion is, if you put flour in it or you put sugar in it, you have ruined it.
Yeah. A lot of traditionalists totally agree, and I talk about that in the book. I say that, you know, some people would tune me out right here, you know. But it really depends on the quality of the cornmeal that you're using, and I agree. It also depends on what you're used to. I mean, you know,
good cornbread is easy to find in the grocery store if you stick to certain brands. You know, the guy with the I'm trying not to mention a brand here, but the guy with the hat from Pennsylvania, not the best choice.
Oh, I see. Okay, fair enough. Thanks for not mentioning that. Our legal department thanks you for that.
Yes.
There's one, I don't know what the brand is, it has an Indian on it that's pretty good, comes in smaller bags.
Yep,
and then there's another one from a mill that's actually quite good.
Yes.
What else did I want to say? I was interested in the southwestern side of mine, and the recipes that I posted. I grew up in South New Mexico.
Yep, sure.
In North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, et cetera. And so have my family's got a big tradition.
Yeah.
With lots of different kinds.
Yeah.
Anyway, one of the things I put in the blog was a little southwestern embellishments. For instance, you can throw a can of green chilies in it.
Sure.
And shred some good cheese into it, and it makes a very, very nice treat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Jalapeno or chili cheese cornbread is delicious.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Again, I kid you not, I just opened to pages, and then I won it. Again, Hattie's meatloaf.
Meatloaf.
How do you lose with that?
You don't.
You don't.
It's a win-win.
And again, the pictures. Heather's pictures are making
they're
hungry.
Delicious, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really, she did a great job. And, you know, for both of us, neither one of us had a whole lot of food styling experience before this, but we feel like we're pretty well-versed after the fact. We learned through a lot of trial and error, and we had a lot of fun doing it. And she takes really good photos, and there's no doubt.
Yeah. Did you brought it last time, didn't you bring some
meatloaf?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll bring it next time. I don't know if I have brought meatloaf, but I certainly can. We could have some meatloaf sandwiches in here for.
Well, you know, I saw Alan out in the hallway before the show, and I think he left, but he's at a meeting. But he said, "Who's on today?" I said, "Jasper's on." Eyes got as wide as saucers. Is he bringing the chicken? Well, you didn't bring the chicken today, but you did very well.
Oh, that's good.
Let's go back to the calls at 800-348-2551. Bill and Troy. Bill.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Doing great.
Thanks for taking my call. Listen, the reason I called is I started out real early in my career working in the restaurant business. And after 10 years, I left that. But I just want to give a shout-out to people who work in the restaurant business. They're the best.
Oh,
and I hear you guys chatting about food and about drink, and it's really terrific. It takes me back. And I love it.
I
want to thank you.
We appreciate it. That's very kind, and we take all the food's a pretty universal thing. So, we all need it and enjoy it on some level.
But the people who prepare it, and the people who serve it, and the people who pour those drinks, they're the best.
Yeah,
they're the best.
I would agree.
Bill, thanks a lot for the call. Are you a tough taskmaster in the kitchen?
Yes and no. I mean, I have, but I've, as my wife will tell, I've softened over the years.
Yeah.
Honestly, I used to be kind of a
tirades and whatnot, type A.
Not a tirades. I was never a thrower of pans or anything of that kind.
Break the pan.
Yeah. And, in a prior life, sort of pre-Hatties, I was much more ferocious than I am now. I'm blessed with a really professional crew that does what they're supposed to do, and that makes my job easier.
Our guest today is Chef Jasper Alexander. The new book is The Hatties Restaurant Cookbook. He'll be signing that at the Open Door Bookstore tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Let's go to Sue in Valencia. Sue.
Hi.
Hi.
First of all, your cookbook is my number one wish for my Christmas list.
Oh, well, thank you.
Well, I hope Santa's listening.
Yeah, absolutely.
Me, I hope so, too. Second is, you are the master of fried chicken. Yeah. Please give us some tips on how to make good fried chicken.
Right, so you'll be very happy if you get the book, because I have a whole section on the fried chicken just itself. And that includes a whole lot of tips on how to fry at home, which is more than we have time to get into here at this point. But basically, you kind of got to decide your commitment level to frying at home, and then there's
what do
and
you
then
mean?
Well, you can. I mean, probably the safest and the best way to go is to buy a tabletop fryer, and there's some good ones out there, both on the retail level that are available to everybody, as well as with a little bit of effort, you could seek out a commercial variety, which wouldn't be that much more expensive. And if you're going to fry a lot, then that's really the best way to go. But you're sort of, at that point, committed into keeping a little bit of extra oil around. And by extra, I mean a few gallons.
Right.
Not an extra pint of olive oil. And you're going to need to filter it in order for it not to be just a loss leader and replacing the oil every time you use it. You're going to need to be able to, get the food particles out of it and have a place to store it, which, could be the garage or an extra refrigerator if it's in the summer months. I mean, in the winter, it's stored just fine outside. In the summertime, you'd want to, it will go rancid after a while.
Sure,
so it's nothing you can use sort of indefinitely. And that's really the best and the safest way to go. But that's a commitment. Like, you got to buy the fryer, and then you got to keep a large amount of oil. But the other way is an electric skillet, because that typically has the depth needed to, you might not be able to deep fry, but you'll be able to deep fry most things and pan fry, which is sort of the method that has the most oil next to deep frying. So like chicken would be would float and be submerged. The top might be floating around. And that works really well because it has an electronic thermostat.
Yeah.
And so you can help judge the oil, or the temperature of the oil, which is critical.
So it's not really advisable to pan fry on a stove?
Well, no, no, no. You can.
I remember my mom doing that's my earliest memory is my mom doing that.
Everybody has this vision of people pan frying and cast iron skillets on the stove. And of course, that is absolutely doable. And that's the third method that I talk about, which is sort of the most basic and rustic, totally effective. You need to have a cast iron pan or some other sort of, a Le Creuset pan, something that's enamel that really helps to hold the heat. Something that's more of a Dutch oven size than a pan to prevent any overflow. A candy thermometer, it becomes critical then because your typical instant read thermometer won't go up to 350 or 400 degrees. Some of them do. If you buy a digital one, at a good kitchen shop, they might. But a candy thermometer, pretty much any grocery store has a candy thermometer, and that'll give you temperatures up to 500 degrees.
Yeah.
And it's gauging that temperature. And then you just got to be careful. I mean, if you have an electric stove or a gas stove, and really electric stoves are almost more a danger factor than gas stoves. And someone hits the stove or sloshes that high oil over there. I mean, and if it goes on that electric burner, it's going to ignite. So, having a fire extinguisher nearby just in case, God forbid, you want to be careful. And that's why some of those other methods. But if you go with a Dutch oven, something that's got, sides that are 5-6 inches, where you can get the amount of oil you need in the pan and still have some room to play with, some headspace on there that's that you're not, the oil isn't bubbling up to the top and jumping out of the pan a little bit. It's safe to do at home. You just got to be careful.
That's
keep the
brilliant.
Kids, keep the kids away.
But I never thought of the Dutch oven. We bought one a couple of years ago.
Dutch
and they're
perfect,
very handy, but I never thought about deep
frying.
They're
heavy, and that's really the perfect pan to fry in a pan at home in.
Chef Jasper Alexander is our guest. Over to Mark in Middletown. Mark, you're on.
Hi, guys. Just sitting here in a pool of saliva listening to you guys. An earlier caller had asked about a good local source for andouille sausage, and I just wanted to give a shout-out to the Quaker Creek store in Pine Island, New York.
Yeah.
Fantastic sausages of all kinds.
Oh, where's Pine Island, Mark? Where's
near Warwick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yep. I'll have to investigate that.
Yes, they have a great website called Quaker Creek Store.
Okay. All right. We'll check it out. Thanks,
okay.
Mark. Appreciate it very
Thank
much.
You.
See ya. Over to Ray in Salem, New York. Ray, you're on.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. Well. Nice to have you here.
You're having a... Well, I've got to say I'm drooling as well, but I was just at your restaurant, Hattie's, in Saratoga this past weekend for brunch.
Thank you.
Which I dream about doing without children every so often. just for the shrimp and grits alone, I love everything, but the shrimp and grits, I have to say to you, how do you do it? Because I've tried to emulate it at home, and I cannot do it to save my life.
Well, it's in the book.
And
so,
it's not in the cookbook.
It
so
is in the cookbook. No, it is in the cookbook. It's
it
actually,
is.
It is. It's just
it
slightly, it's under barbecue, savory barbecue shrimp. And so it's
okay.
So that's a dish that I've been making.
My son bought the cookbook.
Oh, good.
He bought the cookbook for a present for his father.
Oh, nice.
But I haven't seen it.
So
but
yeah, look
like,
up the savory. Look up the savory barbecue shrimp, and that is the shrimp that's on the shrimp and grits. So it's it's a spice blend, and then we make a sauce with that spice blend and honey and soy sauce and olive oil and parsley and lemon juice, and then the shrimp are soaked in there. And then we cook them with some cream and some butter.
I got to tell you, I could eat it for the rest of my life.
They're delicious.
8 million pounds, but it is probably the best thing I've ever had.
It's like celery.
It's like celery, really? Oh, I find that hard to
believe. It's a calorie deficit. You'll be fine.
Ray, thanks for the call.
Exactly. Well, thanks so much.
Have a great weekend. You know, the latter portion of this book has cocktails.
Cocktails.
And again, the photographs are making me want one.
They're beautiful.
Cool as a Cucumber. Tell me about that one.
Cool as a Cucumber is just a super refreshing summer drink. It's either gin or vodka, and it's the cucumber and ice and a little lime juice, and it's just super refreshing. It's a really crisp summer drink.
Well, the book is it's a great book, and I got to tell you, it's been fun having you here.
I always enjoy being here. We have a great time.
So we'll see you for the Super Bowl. I expect
I'll be there about 10 in the morning.
Buy about 10 gross of the olives and a couple gallons of the pimento cheese.
Yep, and make a big batch of Bloody Marys maybe. I think that sounds like a...
Oh, that's in the book as well, Bloody Marys
in the book.
Saratoga Bloody Marys. There's something about them.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't matter where you go. There's a Bloody Mary in Saratoga very good.
There is.
Well, great having you here.
Ray, it's always a pleasure.
You'll be at the Open Door Bookstore tomorrow.
Open Door Bookstore tomorrow.
And then presumably you get a little sleep.
And then I think sometime beginning of the week I'm going to schedule some sleep.
Good. Do that. And then maybe you hit the road again in the new year.
I think in the new year we're going to hit the road again. Small little Northeast tour. And, you know, the book's been nominated for some James Beard Awards and some ICAP Awards. That doesn't mean anything yet, so we'll see. But if it gets pushed into a category for one of those, that might dictate a little bit more substantial tour. We'll see. But
well, fantastic.
It's a long shot, but we're hoping.
Well, we hope to have you back here real soon, and hope Alan will be here.
Anytime. I'd love to see Alan, absolutely.
And I want to thank everybody for listening today to the program. Do you have time to do the podcast?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so you'll stick around. You'll stay up for another hour.
Yep.
All right, man. Thanks a lot to Chef Jasper Alexander for being here today. Support comes from 20 Railroad Public House, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, providing local and seasonally inspired pub fare using antibiotic and added hormone-free meats, local produce, craft beer, cocktails, and wine. 20railroad.com. Field Goods, working with our local farmers to deliver weekly produce year-round to workplaces and community locations. Field Goods supports small farms, healthy eating, and wellness programs. Field-goods.com. Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings, Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. And Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasonings, Sheffield, Massachusetts. Handcrafted in small batches, infused sea salts, peppers, and blends for holiday gifts, weddings, and corporate events. RollingRockSalt.com for events and details. Thanks again to Chef Jasper Alexander. The book, Hattie's Restaurant Cookbook, Classic Southern and Louisiana Recipes. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Well done, Zach. Maybe have an olive popper now. Come on in. Yeah, sure. Your phones were answered today by Barb King. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Have a wonderful weekend. And on Monday, Alan will be back at 2 for a Medical Monday. Stay tuned now for news.